Om Shanti. We are doing the series Beyond Questions. Question number 39. There are so many people in this world who stay upset without any reason, and many are in Baba's knowledge also. What is the reason behind this? How can we help them? The question is, there are many people in the world who stay upset without any reason, and there are many, and many are in Baba's Gyan also. What is the reason behind this? How can we help them? So many people in the world are upset, depressed, without any visible reason. So the brother or sister is asking, what is the reason behind this? And how can we help them? There are two types of depression. One is exogenous, another is endogenous. There are some minor depressions. There is a major depression. There is psychosis and there is neurosis. These are some medical terminologies. So there are people in the world who stay upset without any conspicuous reason. We need to understand the philosophy of staying upset, or this philosophy of depression. To stay upset or depressed is also a sanskar. There are people, just as you have other habits, just as there are other habits of becoming peevish, irritable with every slightest provocation. In the similar manner, this is also a habit. Depression, to stay upset. This is also a sanskar, a deep-rooted sanskar. There is no reason to stay upset. There is, everything is going on so well in the family. Children are well settled, husband or wife, no problems with them. Everything is all right. All relationships are good, but still man is depressed. Why? One, as I said, there must be probably this experience or this repetition has happened, and because of that repetition, this has become an ingrained habit with the person. And that's why quite in spite of himself, depressive thoughts come. Quite in spite of himself, all these thoughts of despondency come. He doesn't want, but still, he gives way to despair. One need to understand how this habit started. One need to understand from where this sanskar came. What is the origin? What was the inception point of this sanskar? One is this. Second, the seed of depression is in the subconscious mind. The seed of depression is there. That seed might have been planted by somebody whilst you were in your school days, in your childhood, in your college days, in some unseen events, ununderstood moments of life. Those seeds have come. Some unacknowledged moments of life, those seeds have been planted, either by ourselves or by others. We wanted something we did not get. Okay? Then we try to say, oh, we adjust. And then depression seed, that seed of frustration. We did something and we met with frustration, but we made a show of that we have got unaffected. We remained unaffected. Since we are Brahmin, so we cannot give way to sorrow, suffering, misery, crying. What the Brahmin family will say? If suppose somebody who is very much dear and nearer to me, suddenly he dies. Okay? And I maintain that he is a soul. Soul is eternal. Soul is imperishable. And I don't cry. I stop all my tears. Because I have to show off that I am a great yogi. Okay? Those suppressed tears gradually take form of depression in the long run. That's why in psychiatry there is a term catharsis. Catharsis means, cathartics means laxatives. Laxative means went out. Emotional catharsis. Whatever that is suppressed within in some nook or corner of the mind, that should get a ventilation. That should come out. And unless and until that comes out, depression will persist. In childhood, suppose somebody is bullied by his batchmates. Okay? So that memory is still there. They used to tease me. Now he has become adult. He is married. He has got children. But still, that fear is persistent. In the childhood, once somebody is locked in a dark room for 6 hours, and later on the whole life, that fear of closed spaces, claustrophobia, dark spaces persists. Seed is there in the subconscious mind. The question is without any reason. There is nothing in this world without any reason. The reason is there in the subconscious mind. Probably we have not seen it. Napoleon Bonaparte was just 6 months old and he was in the cradle. The maid who was looking after Napoleon just went out for some time and a cat jumped upon Napoleon. And the child, 6 month child, he started crying and he got afraid. But luckily, the same time the maid came and he saw the child is unscathed, not at all hurt. But this fear persisted in his mind for such a long time that Napoleon was unconquered throughout. But at the Battle of Waterloo, he was defeated because Crito, he got to know his enemy that Napoleon is afraid of cats. And he brought 17 cats, I think. I don't know the figure, I forgot. He brought all those cats and they all cat pounced upon Napoleon and he got unarmed. And that was his defeat. So from where it has come? He would not fear a lion. He would fight lion. He would tear apart the fiercest, the ferocious of animals. But he was afraid of this cats. From where this fear came? It was there stored in the subconscious mind. Yes, he could have worked on it. Yes, he could have done a lot of practices on this. Why do I fear? What is there? Was he not a logical man? He was a logical man. He knew what is there to get afraid of cat. He could have attained to that stage of timidity, fearlessness. But he remained afraid throughout. And ultimately he got defeated. So, in the similar manner, you need to search, ransack the seed of depression, fear, anxiety. Something is there, hidden within. That's why one of the yoga experiment is, make this a screen of your life, okay? And see, this is the point I am born. Look at your own childhood. This is my childhood. What are the childhood traumas? What are the childhood traumas? What are the hurts that I received? And probably they are still unhealed, still bleeding. Look at your college life. Look at your married life. Or look at your home at present, where you stay. Look at all the jobs. Look at all the offices where you worked. Look at all the stations of your life. See them as a detached observer during Amrit Vela. Not throughout the day. Because throughout the day if you try, you will get situated in the same emotions. Because you will identify yourself with those emotions immediately. But during Amrit Vela, we are little detached. So in that stage of Sakshi, in that stage of detachment, see your complete life. See all the stations of your life. This, see all the places you had been to. Born here, education here, college here, this life here, that I did there. And then when you remember the places, you also remember the people who were there around you. You also remember what they said to you. And you also remember this person said such a filthy thing, such a unspiritual thing to me, and that is still within me. I have yet not forgotten nor forgiven that soul. Identify those soft points, those sensitive points of the life, and start the healing there. You know, during surgery, when they operate, suppose you cut something, they have got cautery. If there are small vessels which are bleeding, they put a cautery and the bleeding stops. And that's how they go inside. Suppose you have to do a surgery, a bigger surgery, you make first cut, skin, subcutaneous tissue. You go deeper and deeper. The moment you start going deeper, bleeding starts. But you want clean field. The best surgeon is one who will work on the clean field. You have to reach your appendix. So he will go inside. So they use cautery. Wherever there is a bleeding, they will put it and healing occurs. Bleeding stops. So that then they cut again. Then again bleeding. Then there's small vessels, capillaries. They start bleeding. So put the cautery and the bleeding heals. Stops. In the similar manner, you have to do self-dissection. Self-dissection. Cut inside and see. Bleeding? See. Just go within the soul and find out what are the points which are still bleeding. What are the points of anxiety? What are the points of fear? What are the points of depression? What are the points of hurts? Traumas. All traumas. Emotional trauma, mental trauma, sexual trauma. All traumas. We have so many patients with us. They had a very traumatic childhood. And later on they became Brahma Kumari or Brahma Kumar. They are in Gyan. They are looking after center independently. But suddenly a depression, suddenly something is coming up. And outside nothing is visible. Everything is alright. All students respect. Everything you have. But that point is there. Some trauma, some sensual trauma. By some near relative, by some cousin, or somebody, some uncle, and that trauma is there still, because it is unhealed. So search the cause. Cause is there. Search the cause in those dark stores of subconscious mind. You will come across. How can we help them? We help them by giving sakash. We help them if others are like that. We help them, making them understand their own problem, their own psychology. Okay. Another question. I have this question in mind. Why are disease increasing? Even though some find the bad eating habits to be a reason, still there are many who have good eating habits and are not free from disease. These are medical questions. Now, disease is such a thing. There are so many aspects of disease: environmental, physical, hereditary, mutational. Multiple factors are there. Your eating habit, your lifestyle. Multiple things are there. There is no one thing which we can pinpoint that. Yes, we find many yogi souls. We find many souls who are having perfect eating habits, who do exercise, who do everything. Whatever, who do pranayama, who do walking, who have very balanced life, balanced diet. But yet they have some or other problem. There are multiple factors. Karmic accounts are there. Spiritual reasons are there. Multiple things are there. But the question is not that why people are suffering. The question is what is our state of the mind when the diseases come. First, we need to have a perfect balanced life so that we can avoid all the diseases. And for that, diet is very important. Here the question is, what is good dieting habits and what bad eating habits? What is good for you may not be good for me. What is good for me may not be good for you. But everybody feels that what I am eating is the best. Every potter praises his pot. Non-vegetarian in the world thinks they are taking the right diet, because that is needed. That much proteins are needed, that much this is needed, that is needed, and you should have that. Vegetarian thinks otherwise. They have so many other things. Vegans think otherwise. They have their own pattern of thinking. Raw foodists think otherwise. So there are multiple diet patterns. Raw food, vegan diet, vegetarian diet, non-vegetarian diet. In that also so many, vegan also so many categories are there. So The thing is, any diet which gives you feeling of wellness, well-being, any diet you feel a deep sense of satisfaction, any diet which is good for your body, any diet which is not making you diseased, any diet, samyak ahar, any diet which will not make you lazy, any diet which will not make you excited is samyak ahar. Any diet which causes laziness, sloth in the body is not the right diet. Any diet which causes excitement of passions is not the right diet. Controversy for milk against milk goes on and on and on. Those who are, even many of the scholars have talked against milk. Some of the scholars are saying brahmacharya, milk is necessary. Some are saying milk is aphrodisiac, increasing libido. There are two schools of thought. I am not going to that controversy. Only thing what I want is any food which augurs wealth, any food which doesn't lead to passion, excitement, any food that helps you maintain your, that helps you in your yoga, that doesn't make you drowsy, sleepy during yoga, that doesn't make you full of passions, that keeps you light. Any food that keeps you, give the feeling of angelic stage is right diet. The question is, it's about disease. I don't want to go into this because it's a very big topic. It's a medical topic. Cause of disease, etiology of diseases, what are the factors, modifiable factor, non-modifiable factor. Some diseases are common in females, some are in males, some are in particular age, some particular race. Multiple things are there in that. What diet you are eating, what is your lifestyle, sedentary lifestyle, non-sedentary lifestyle. So multiple things are there. Most important thing is, or suppose somebody, everything is alright, but also know that there are karmic accounts which will get settled. And disease will still come. Important is not to search the cause of disease. Important is, what is my attitude towards disease? And if at all I have the disease, what I should do now, at least, so that the disease doesn't progress with my uncontrolled diet and with my uncontrolled lifestyle. Everything should be in moderation. It's not about eating nothing and it's not about eating too much. You have to strike a balance. Gita says, naati ucham, naati nicham. Not that you don't sleep, you sleep too much. Sleep, food and speaking. These are the three things that should be in moderation. Ati sarvatra varjate. Excesses always should be shunned like poison. Not eating, too much eating. Not speaking, too much speaking. Not sleeping, too much sleeping. All the three things, eating, sleep and speaking, these all three should not be in extreme, because those extremes do not stay for long. Come to the middle path. Come to that point of balance. And this is a persistent struggle. Mahatma Gandhi has written about his experiments of dietics. Any votary of truth or any person who seeks spiritual path should keep on making experiments with diet throughout his life, till the time you feel that this diet is right for my spirituality, this diet is the right diet for my spiritual growth. Because if the food is tasty, somebody overeats. If the food is not good, somebody doesn't eat or eats less, and that depends. Then you are Amrit Vela. If you eat more, then you feel sleepy. If you don't eat, sometimes people don't eat and in the dead of the night they get up with hunger. Or during yoga they remember food. They want good food at night, otherwise their Amrit Vela suffers. So there are multiple factors. There are people, they say that if we eat at night, we feel sleepy and Amrit Vela. So they eat very less. But one thing is very sure. Night food or dinner, that should be very light. And that should be taken as early as possible. It should not be taken too late at night and it should be very light. Otherwise, how can eating too much and you are thinking of doing a very powerful Amrit Vela? Two things should be empty for Amrit Vela: intellect and stomach. How can the effort makers intensify their efforts? Next question. How can the, yeah. That's why I'm saying it is a persistent experiment with food. You have to keep on experimenting, reading about them, experimenting about them, trying about them, knowing about them, increasing your knowledge about dietics. What is the diet which is best suited for a yogi? And then come to the conclusion. Don't jump to conclusions. Any diet change should be a evolution, not revolution. Don't bring out Kranti in diet. It should be gradual evolution. It is said in English, you can change a man's religion, but not his diet. Dharma you can change, but diet you cannot change. That's why don't be very aggressive during diet, in diet. You, whatever you want to try steamed vegetable, try steamed. You want to try boiled, try boiled. If you want to try raw, try raw. If you want to try cooked, if you want to in cooked also you want to try without chili, you try. Keep on trying everything. A day will come, you will know, yeah, this is what. You will hit the bullseye. This is what I wanted. Search of right yogic diet should go on persistently. Okay? I'll answer later on. How can the effort makers intensify their efforts? This whole thing is for same only. Intensifying efforts only. Basically, pay attention to Gudamrit Vela, pay attention to churning of Murli, go in solitude, go in silence, spend some time in silence every day. Every day, some moments of silence should be there. Because without silence, spiritual growth is not possible. Impossible. In foreign countries, there was one person, a German philosopher, George Gurdjieff. What is the capital of Georgia? Georgia. No, in that capital, Tbilisi, something like that. So in that capital, he did an experiment. What he did? He took 30 of his disciples, 30 people in one room, you have to stay for 1 month, but stay there as if other person is not existing. Behave in a manner as if you have not seen other person, you have not heard other person, you have to maintain silence without speaking a single word and behave in a manner as if you are staying alone. This experiment he conducted in that capital of Georgia. And if you are found to break this rule, you will be out. So within few days, 27 people were out. Only 3 remained. Only 3 people remained. Means you have to behave as if you are alone. You don't have to see, you don't have to look at into anybody's eyes. You don't have to if suppose somebody did some disturbance to you, you don't say, oh, why you did this to me. Nothing. You behave, stay in one room, as if you are just alone. And no one else is there in that room. Behave as if, just as in Baba's Milan we are told, every time Suraj Bhaiji tells, stay as if you are alone in this hall. Nobody else is there. You and Baba, that's it. So in this experiment was done, you behave in a manner as if you are alone. None is there. Only 3 people remained. And one of his pupil, P.D. Obspensky, he was one of those 3. So P.D. Obspensky, later on when he wrote In the Search of Miraculous, he was called and he was made to sit in front of him after 1 month, because he passed in that exam. And he was asked, Obspensky, he was called out his name. He was unaware to whom he is calling. His master is calling whom, he did not know. He kept on Obspensky. He was as if he has even forgotten his name. That was an experiment. See, these people also did all sorts of such experiments. Can we also do this? Behave as if nobody is there. When somebody has come and gives you a jerk, behave as if nothing is there. Don't look with an angry eyes to that person. Who is this who doesn't have any manners? Nothing. No reaction. You behave in the room here in Madhuban as if no disturbance. Somebody's mobile is ringing and somebody's this and that. No, who is this? I will see him after the class. Nothing. Let everybody do. You remain as if unconcerned. Just not seeing anybody. Seeing only yourself. That is an experiment. So here the best thing is silence. Stop seeing others. At least for 1 day. 1 day we can do. The results would be amazing. But it's a very difficult task.
So you would call that silence?
I'm just giving you one example, just example. This is an example conducted by these philosophers of the world way back. So we can also have something like this. My word, the silence, what I am saying is not just absence of words, but you remain focused in yourself, self-centered. Silence is Swachintan. Silence is not about Ramayana, it's about Gita. Thinking of oneself. Last question. When Baba comes in Dadi's body, why does he speak so softly? When Bhog is offered to Baba, who eats it? So, Baba, you know, this question was asked many times. So, Srila Venji has answered this question once. Suppose a man has not talked for a long time and suddenly he was made to talk. So suddenly, definitely he will talk with that muffled voice. In the similar manner, look at Baba. For 5,000 years he remains silent. And suddenly he descends and he starts speaking. So how can he shout? So gradually his voice will be, you know, like that, as if very soft voice. I cannot give any philosophical answer to this question. I think Baba only should tell why he speaks like that and why he sometimes uses his that voice and sometimes the voice of this chariot. That is, so many questions are there. So what you have to do with voice? Look at the content and look at the content and look at the matter. The person is same, don't worry. Whether he uses this voice or that voice, that is not the thing. It's not about voice quality or voice thing. And one more important thing, which I had spoken long back also. Baba is speaking two sentences, okay? One sentence finished and second sentence. He is speaking something in between also. And that is where he is speaking exactly. In that antaral, in that interval, probably he is speaking something. In that silence, what he speaks is more important than what he speaks in the sentences. So, learn to listen to that interval. Inter-sentence interval. That phase, that pause when he gives. He speaks one sentence, he pauses. Try to listen his silence. That is more important than what he speaks and how he speaks. Okay. Next is, who eats the bhog? Shambhai. Bhog is offered, so who eats? He doesn't touch anything. He just accepts the feelings, the vibrations, that's it. Like, bhog is eaten by you all Brahmins only. But he accepts the vibrations. Your feeling, your love, your emotions, your affection associated with that bhog. But he has nothing to do with this worldly business. What bhog and what all these things? This music, birthday music and Shivratri music and loud music and songs. He is the one who is staying beyond sound. He is in Nirvandham. He has nothing to do with this world of sound. Nothing. He is beyond everything. It's you all are doing. It's actually your feelings, your emotions, your love. And since you are in the body, you embodied beings have to do all such worldly stuff. As such, he doesn't have anything to do with anything of this world. Nothing. He has no business with anything. He is such a detached observer of this world. Such a detached observer. Nothing means nothing. But yes, when he comes, he plays the part of an emotional father who loves you, an emotional mother who caresses you, an emotional friend, an emotional teacher, a Sadguru. All these things he is playing the part. But in fact, he himself is detached. He has nothing to do. Anasakt. That is what his stage is. So you only eat the bhog, and who eats? He has what he will eat. He doesn't eat. He accepts the vibrations you love. That's it. Om Shanti. Yeah, that's another question.